Hello there, theater lovers. It's me, Bryn. Today, I'm really excited to talk to you about this little rom-com play by Jordan Elizabeth Henry. You guys are going to hear from her later in the episode. She is a delight. And I will say, I am moving right now, so there will be no announcements today because I am running around packing everything I own. But I do encourage you guys, as always, to look at the Tanks calendar and also look at New Dramatists. They have a whole list of things that you can watch. So if you're interested in seeing some virtual theater in the next week or so, that's what I would recommend. Announcements will be back to normal next episode when I have gotten my crap together in the new place. But for now, this is your intro. So, let's get into the world of To Fall in Love with Anyone by Jordan Elizabeth Henry. Jordan Elizabeth Henry is a playwright currently living and writing in Cincinnati, Ohio. Her play, Transfiguration, has been developed in Pittsburgh, Houston, Kansas, and soon to be Montgomery. Her one-act play, What the Mind Forgets, will be produced by Millersville University Theater in spring and will receive a reading with Heartland Theater in summer of this year. Her full-length play, Resurrection, received a workshop in New York this May and will go on to be published by Next Stage Press later this year. Here is a summary of To Fall in Love with Anyone from New Play Exchange. Ronnie and Zeke, both actors trying to find their big breaks, have spent the last 3 months as bitter enemies after a night of passion turned sour. Now that they're forced to work together after landing roles in the same play, they agree to put their differences behind them and build their stage chemistry. But they both, of course, have their own plans to seek revenge, and only time will tell who will end up on top. This play is one of the only, if not the only, play that I've seen that is a romantic comedy, like a modern one. We normally only see this genre in movies or TV, so I found it so interesting and fun to see it in theatrical form. So, how did the genre of the rom-com come about? A few sources argue that the beginning of the romantic comedy was actually Shakespeare. That's right, Much Ado About Nothing, my personal favorite, and A Midsummer Night's Dream are often cited as some of the first rom-coms. But this genre as we know it today, with all of its tropes that we love to satirize, truly started in film. According to Glamour magazine, there are two silent films from 1924 that could be credited as the first rom-coms: Sherlock Jr., starring Buster Keaton, and Girl Shy. But according to the Romantic Comedy Festival website, the first groundbreaking rom-com was It Happened One Night from 1934. It won 5 Oscars, all the 5 big ones: Best Director, Screenplay, Actor, Actress, and Best Picture. Apparently, this film, quote, set off a dominant rom-com era in Hollywood, where farcical situations were beginning to be mixed with more realistic depictions of romantic relationships. From there, we got movies such as The Philadelphia Story with Audrey Hepburn, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes with Marilyn Monroe, and Guys and Dolls, all classic romantic comedies that, if you haven't seen, you've probably at least heard of. Rom-coms fell in popularity in the 1960s, but they resurged in the 70s. The film Annie Hall is credited mostly with this resurgence. And now we get into the super classic 80s and 90s rom-coms that have honestly become household names, such as Pretty in Pink, When Harry Met Sally, and Never Been Kissed. Obviously, this continued into the early 2000s with movies such as Hitch and A Cinderella Story, and still continues now. I'm happy to say nowadays, though, that not all rom-coms are straight. There are more LGBTQA+ rom-coms coming out, like Love, Simon, and Happiest Season. I may have watched Happiest Season like 5 times this past Christmas season. God, that was such a good movie. But we all know that the classic rom-com has its problematic tropes. We all know about the tropes like friends to lovers and the love triangle, and they always have to have a little breakup so that they can get back together at the end, and tropes like those can be really funny and actually really awesome when they're done right. But there are some tropes that have been brought up lately, mostly by feminine people, feminine presenting or identifying people, about how the men in rom-coms behave. One of these is the men and women can't be friends trope. This is something usually told to the masculine man love interest by his buddies, or something that he espouses himself. This perpetuates the idea that men just see women as sex objects instead of people they could have platonic relationships with. It's an inherently patriarchal idea that contributes to unhealthy dynamics in opposite sex relationships. Another is when the enemies to lovers trope is done incorrectly. This is one that I personally think can be done really well. It's actually done pretty well in this play. As long as your characters grow and learn and eventually realize that they've been shitty and work it all out a la Much Ado. But often that's not the case. This perpetuates another unhealthy patriarchal idea that when women say they don't like you, or they're defensive or outright aggressive with you, that they are actually attracted to you. It takes away a woman's agency and her right to say no, which plays into rape culture. There are a lot more that I could point out, but I'll just leave you with one last one that I think is really important, which is the makeover trope. You know, like how in Grease, Sandy basically changes everything about herself to make Danny like her. Or how in Princess Diaries, sorry, Anne Hathaway, they make her pretty by making her take off her glasses and straightening her curly hair. Yeah. These things don't only serve to tell young women or women presenting people that they need to fundamentally change themselves to get a partner, but that certain traits, such as curly hair or glasses, are inherently undesirable. And hey, my mom and my husband both have curly hair and glasses, and they are beautiful, dang it. Beauty standards are already tough enough to deal with as a young person. This trope, in movies marketed usually to young, feminine-presenting people, only serves to enforce those standards, which are another tool of the patriarchy used to keep women and feminine people, quote, in their place. So yeah, not a big fan. So let me just tell you that this play takes all of the good tropes of romantic comedy and leaves all the rest. No need to worry about toxic masculinity or gaslighting or overly straight bullcrap here. I felt it was important to point out the harmful things in romantic comedies in this dramaturgy section because it is such a big part of how the genre is currently developing in the modern day. So yeah, I hope that gives you some cool insight into this play. And with that, it's time for our reading portion. Returning actor Edie Pierce will be performing a monologue as Ronnie from To Fall in Love with Anyone. But first, a word from our sponsor. And now, Edie Pierce performing as Ronnie from To Fall in Love with Anyone.
So you, what? Love me because of the way I make you feel. I'm more than just a source of validation for you. I don't think you know that. I don't think you've ever understood that. Not when we were friends who were just fooling around, even though we both knew what it was. And certainly not now. We're bad together, Zeke. It's time to just face that and move on for good. What else could there possibly be left of us after all of this? I don't think I can trust you, or myself with you. And what about you? Why would you even want to earn back my trust? What I did to you was awful. I'm an asshole, and you're an asshole. We need to stay as far away from each other as possible.
Thank you so much, Edie, for that stunning performance. If anyone would like to contact Edie with professional inquiries, her contact information is in the show notes of this episode. And now I'd like to welcome the playwright herself, Jordan Elizabeth Henry, to the show. I already read you guys her bio in the dramaturgy section, so without any further ado, here she is!
Hi, Jordan.
Hi, it's so nice to finally meet you in person and get to be on here.
It's so nice to see you. I'm super excited to talk about this play because, as you may know, it's been a little dark over here in the Playmates world for the past few weeks. So I'm really excited to talk to you about this play.
Yeah, I'm super excited too. I had a chance just to listen to the last 448 Psychosis and loved it. Was so excited to hear about the play. That made me even more excited to come on here and talk to you. So,
yes,
dark. Dark is how it's been.
It does. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking when I put all those in a row, but you know what? It happens. Yeah. I'm making up for it now. Yeah, because I read this play a little while back because we're in a Discord together for playwrights and we were all sharing our new play exchanges, and I read this and I was like, oh my god, I don't think we see modern romantic comedy genres on stage, really? So I found it to be like just really interesting. And my first question always to a playwright is, what inspired you to write this play? And I suspect it may have something to do with the New York Times article?
It did, yes. I read it when it first came out. And if you're not familiar with the article, it's very easy to Google to fall in love with anyone do this. And it's fascinating and wonderful. But I read it in 2015 and thought immediately, like, this should be a play. This sounds like I could do something with this. And have read another play on New Play Exchange that was beautiful, that used the questions as well. But it's a tragedy. And I can't remember what it's called. I probably should have prepared myself a little bit better.
Oh, that's okay.
It was the article really. And the characters just kind of came out of reading the questions again, and yeah
it's lovely when that happens, isn't it, when you sit down and you're like, oh, it's here.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like the play, I wrote the first draft of it in like 4 days. It just like the questions like gave it such a perfect structure, and it was so easy to kind of like get into the flow of it. The fastest play I've ever written by far. And yeah, I just kind of fell in love with those characters answering those questions to each other.
Yeah, wow. It's awesome when you can have an inspiration like that. Like, that you 4 days?
Yeah.
4 days is insane, Jordan.
I know, it was crazy. It was a crazy few days. And then, I rewrote it a lot of times. But yeah, that first draft, that shitty first draft was pretty fast.
Yeah, no, I think the fastest I've ever written a first draft is maybe a month, and I thought that was crazy.
So, to be fair, like, that's usually, like, the fastest I go is, like, solid month to get the first draft out, and this one was just like, whoop, there it is.
Yeah, no, and I kind of almost sense that in the dialogue because it flows so well and so naturally. But it also, I wrote a note in my book, of play notes that it was, zippy.
Zippy. I like that. I like zippy.
Yeah. And I was just, as someone who occasionally struggles with dialogue, I was like, how did this come to you? What was your secret for writing the dialogue in this play?
Oh, no secret. I've been writing plays for 13 years. It's the only medium I work in. And I read a lot of plays. I am on New Play Exchange all the time. I think I have like 250 recommendations on there because I've read, I've just read so much. I love theater. I love plays. And I love writing things that I think would be fun for actors to read and to act through. So yeah, I think dialogue, when I have an idea of who these characters are, the dialogue just kind of like rolls, you know.
Wow. Yeah, reading plays for sure. I don't think I realized that until I got into late undergrad that is so important.
It really is. And that is why New Play Exchange is so amazing, you know, having to that much work.
We're always singing New Play Exchange's praises over here. For that reason, especially.
Yeah.
Go out and read more plays. But yeah, and I can see how that would definitely help with the dialogue. But like you said, these characters really, they jump off the page because I think they just, you can almost see that they came easily to you because of just how dynamic they are.
Yeah.
And what I really loved is how you took rom-com tropes, such as the contrasting revenge plots that kind of cancel each other out. Yeah. But you also subvert them in some really interesting ways. So did you have like a strategy for approaching this genre or something you wanted to do with it?
You know, all of my plays are pretty dark except for this one. I write a lot about trauma. I write a lot about mental illness, and mental health, and a lot about sexual assault. Those are kind of my normal go-tos. And I just went through this period where I wrote a lot of really dark stuff and needed to just write something that is also important in a different way. You know, I think people need love and romance as much as they need some more serious, like, I don't know, heady kind of stuff. You know, my sister-in-law is a writer, a rom-com writer, a women's fiction writer.
Oh, wow.
And I read her books and just really fell in love with them. I think she's brilliant and knew as soon as her first one's called Beach Read. And as soon as I read it, I thought, yep, I need to write a rom-com. Like this feels really important and good. And like you said, you don't see it in theater very much. You don't see it on the stage. And so I wanted to do something that was a little bit more like, yeah, interesting and different and new and fresh.
I know, especially what I found to be really interesting and intriguing to me was how you chose to end the play.
Mm.
Because normally, I think when we see a rom-com movie, the ending is pretty much always like a wedding, kind of like a Shakespeare comedy.
Yeah.
or there's this like sort of reassurance that the couple is now like together forever, happy ever after, whatever. But we don't get that.
Yeah.
In this, it's kind of left open.
Mm-hmm.
Did you plan that, or is that something that just kind of happened?
It just kind of happened. And that's really the way that I end a lot of my plays, is just kind of free and open. I don't care for ribbons and bows very much. I don't like things to be all, all tied up at the end. I like some mystery, and you know, that's real life, you know. And I think something that the stage can do a little bit differently than a movie is that when you're interacting with a stage play, you're not necessarily setting yourself up for the same big like trumpets and like wedding and like all of the fun stuff at the end. So it wasn't really a strategy. It's just sort of my MO, I guess, is kind of open and not all tied up, but
it really grounds the play in reality, which I think sometimes with rom-coms a lot of people are like, oh, this is definitely like a fantasy or, you know, something that wouldn't actually happen necessarily. But this actually felt like it could happen.
Yeah.
Especially because of that ending, I think.
Oh, cool. No, thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. It's good to hear that kind of feedback, to be frank.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that the play does well as well as just kind of keeps it grounded, keeps the characters really true to human nature, I think.
Yeah, no, and there's queer characters in this as well. Even like Zach says he's bi, which as a bisexual person, I was like, oh my god, hey, that's great. Especially as a bisexual person married to a man, I was like, oh, it's kind of refreshing to see this person being like, oh yeah, I'm bi, but I'm in love with this woman, and that doesn't make me any less queer.
Yeah, yeah. I'm also really glad to hear that. I don't identify as queer in any way, but I, you know, I'm in the theater world. I have lots of queer friends, and I a lot of queer actor friends as well. And I want to write roles for them, you know, that excite them and engage them and feel like, in some way, they're slipping into their home, into their own body a little bit, as well as kind of like getting to experience the fantasy of being someone else, you know?
Yeah. Yes. I think that's really important. I think that's really important. And there's a non-binary character in there too. So it really is, it feels very real because it's not just necessarily a bunch of straight white people running around like it is in a lot of movies.
Yeah. I'm very conscious of that. And it's, very conscious of writing characters that are not me. And, you know, that's kind of like an always evolving conversation in the writing world of like whose stories you tell and in what way you do. And hopefully I hope that this play feels true to real life and not, I don't know the word I'm trying to say, exploitative in any way. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely, at least from my perspective reading it, I thought you did a very good job.
Oh, cool.
Great. Be reassured.
Great, thank you.
And speaking of Zeke, I think I called him Zach. Why did I do that? speaking of Zeke, I really love the evolution of his relationship with Ronnie. A lot of times because it reminded me of my very favorite Shakespeare comedy, which is Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah.
Was there anything, did you have any plays or movies or other media that kind of inspired you as you were like creating new drafts of this play?
Yeah. I watched a lot of rom-coms getting ready for it. I watched a lot of my favorites like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And I missed the boat completely on this 3 years ago, but I just watched, To All the Boys I've Loved Before. And just was like, this is perfect. This is a perfect movie. So those were some of the like movies that were in my brain. And then, yeah, like I said, my sister-in-law's books, are a huge inspiration to me, and I had Shakespeare in mind as well. Not specifically Much Ado, but just sort of the wedding comedy thing.
Yeah, there's something, I think it was something about Zeke and Ronnie and how they were very good at ribbing on each other, which is something that I always associate with Beatrice Benedict.
Yeah.
Is that sort of by the end, at least, loving sort of ribbing with each other, which I really loved because I think that's something that in real life people who love each other do a lot. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, my husband and I rib on each other all the time. Yeah. It's an essential part of our relationship. So I loved that. And of course, we have the classic rom-com Miscommunication.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of times in rom-coms, we go, if they had only just said this movie would be over in 20 minutes. But the miscommunication that's kind of the inciting incident for this actually felt like it wasn't something that could be solved in just saying a sentence to somebody, which I appreciated a lot.
Yeah, I think that is like kind of a trap of rom-coms is that, you can get, and I did as I was drafting was like, oh, I keep writing into this and realizing like this is an easy problem to fix. They could fix it pretty easy, and just trying to up the stakes and up the complications. And yeah,
that was something that I really enjoyed was that the stakes weren't like fake high. Like it seems like they are in a lot of movies of this genre. They actually did seem like there is a lot at stake here,
without anybody like dying imminently.
Without anybody dying or being or imminent dying imminently or being hurt physically at least.
Yeah.
Which I thought was refreshing and nice. It was just I won't reveal it because I don't want to be spoilers, but it was a miscommunication that definitely required a conversation, a hard conversation work through. And these questions kind of help them do that. Yeah, I felt like it was these questions. Yeah, you can fall in love with someone, but you can also maybe work through I don't know. Yeah. It was just really interesting.
Yeah. Well, that other play that I was talking about that used the questions, it might have just been called To Fall in Love. But that it's about a couple who have lost a child and they're like trying to reconnect using the questions. And I thought that was a fascinating use of them as well. Like, what a beautiful way to use this kind of system, I guess. It's not really a system, but like,
it almost is.
Yeah, it almost is. It is almost like a scientific thing.
At least a little bit scientific, yeah. Psychologically. It feels like, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something I also wanted to point out that subverted rom-com tropes, mm-hmm. was that I think a lot of times, especially in modern day, looking back on older rom-coms, women and femme people especially find that the male counterpart of the couple is actually not very good human, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. kind of manipulative and even gaslighty sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. Zeke is not that.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
He's kind of, he might be a little bro-y sometimes, but he's not.
Yeah, he's like, a gentle soul. Yeah. He really
yes.
is. He's very emotional. He's very, like, he's a little sweetheart. He really is.
His roommates talk about him crying on the bathroom floor over Ronnie, yeah. just like she was doing in her own apartment. I found it very endearing that everyone was so open about him being that way.
Yeah.
Because toxic masculinity is a strong drug, friends.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's, I think that's why this play works very well for me, is that you took the toxic masculinity out of it. It's a lot more enjoyable that way.
I'm glad. I'm glad that nothing felt like super toxic.
No, yeah. And it was just because I think these questions help too, because the characters can be authentic with each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is kind of like the weird magic of the questions, is that does like slowly build and build naturally to where you're very vulnerable with someone, you know? And I think that's, yeah, it's just fascinating. I still am just fascinated by the entire idea of it generally, even after all these years.
Yeah, no, me too. Like, I want to do more research into how these questions were developed, yeah. because as it goes on, yeah, we find out so much about Zeke and Ronnie without there being unnecessary exposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I think, nice for the actors as well.
Yeah. It did really feel a little bit like a magic trick to use the questions. Was like, I don't even feel like I'm doing any heavy lifting here. I feel like the questions are just like supporting the whole play. Like, they're like the spine of the whole thing, like holding it up.
I mean, I definitely think you did some heavy lifting, Jordan. but yeah, as a fellow writer, I think we underestimate the power of prompts.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, they're not just for writing class, guys.
Yeah.
Like, if you find something in the world that gives you that, like, it is okay, write a play.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
It does not have to stay in your college or graduate writing course or high school writing course, right. guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, I think it is time for my final question that I always ask the playwrights I managed to coerce onto this show. Which is, what do you want the audience to get out of reading or seeing this play?
I want people to leave the theater feeling lighter and feeling engaged with the romantic part of themselves. I think we shut it off a lot, especially because things have been quite dark in recent years. And I think love and romance are just as vital to our lives as anything else, and we shut it down so much. And yeah, I want people to be engaged with it a little bit more. Writing it certainly engaged me more with my romantic and loving side. So that's what I want people to get.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. I think when people think of that, playwrights especially, we get in our heads. We're like, oh, there has to be some like huge world shattering thing.
Right.
But
right.
It doesn't have to be.
Right. It can be a little bit more gentle than that.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of, I mean, just in the last episode, about Rachel Nelson's Rain Follows the Plow, one of the final lines is about a quiet revolution. And I think there is something very quietly revolutionary about just being like, connect with your sense of love for yourself and the people around you.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Quiet revolution. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I was like, thank you, Rachel. I'm going to keep that in my brain for the rest of my life.
Absolutely. I love that.
Yes, and you're right. I think in this time, especially these past year or so, it's important to remember that there are still beautiful things
absolutely
in our lives. Daily things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And this play helps us to remember that. So that is important.
That was my goal. So I'm glad that it brought a little bit of joy to your life. That makes
it
me
definitely really
happy.
Did. It definitely did. And I hope it brings joy to any of y'all's lives out there listening. Go to MPX and read it. It's a really fun read. And I think it would be really sweet to see a college students do this play. As a teacher, I was like, oh, this would be such a good play for college.
Yeah. I would love that. That's, yeah, I feel like when I had a reading of it a few weeks ago, and all of the actors were pretty young, and I loved it. Like, I thought they did such an amazing job. They were probably like early 20s, and I thought they did just perfectly. They were great.
Yeah, we don't need to put college kids in a bunch of old age makeup. Like, there are really great contemporary plays out there, like this one, for college and high school students. But that's just my spiel as a theater educator. oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much for joining me here today, Jordan. It has been really, really fun meeting you. And it's been a blast talking about this little play that has been a little bit a light in my life the past week and a half or so. And if any listeners want to find out more about you and your work, as I'm sure they must now, where should they go to do that?
My website is just my name, jordanelizabethhenry.com. You can follow me on Instagram at jlizhenry, J-L-I-Z-H-E-N-R-Y. I do a lot of like writing prompts and things on there. And so I did, like, in February, I did a whole month of writing prompts every day. So yeah, I'm thinking about bringing that back. So if you're interested in things like that, give me a follow.
Yeah, and Jordan will be tagged in all of our Instagram posts about this episode. So if you forget her handle or whatever, it's very easy to find through our Instagram as well. All right, well, thank you once again, Jordan. It has been fantastic having you. And as always, thank you all out there for listening, continuing to listen to this podcast. And if you want to contact me to recommend guests or plays I should talk about, you can email me at theplaymatespodcast@gmail.com, or you can fill out our new Google form on the podcast website, which is playmatespodcast.weebly.com. Follow us on Instagram at Playmates Podcast to get more consistent updates on the podcast and also pictures of my cat. there's also a little link tree in the Instagram bio where you can see the podcast website as well as my own personal website, if for some reason you're interested about what I do, and links to how you can support the podcast if you would like. So feel free to check all of those out as well. And finally, take a second, if you can, to write a good review and rate the podcast 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. It really does mean a lot to me. It makes my week every time I see a new one. And it also helps others to discover the podcast, because that's how, you know, that's how iTunes boosts things. All right. Well, that's all for this episode. I can't wait to see you all in the next episode, in which I will be discussing For Lenora, or Companions, by Haley St. James. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Have a safe and fulfilling week. Bye for now.